हरि
ओम सहनावमतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविनिविशावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 87. Prahlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations towards Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Footnote 22. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrichimala chapter 14, entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. And so when the senses not being controlled, then one can't surrender to Krishna. Right? Whether you're making your own effort, others are trying to help you, it just won't work. So as you try to control the senses, then to that degree, then when you're able to engage in Krishna consciousness. So that's why it's so important, the regulation and the, you know, that is given in Krishna consciousness, right? So if you put that aside, then the problem is then we may fall prey to this verse. Right? If we feel that, no, I don't need to follow all that, or it's not natural and everything like that. But the whole thing is this adult life is not the natural position for the kids. Right? Kids would rather just do their own thing and not be trained at all. So there's no such thing as an adult saying, oh, I'm just being natural. That's totally bogus, right? Because adults have trained themselves, have regulated themselves into a particular mold, right? And then they're saying, oh, I'm being natural within this mold. But if they're being natural, then, you know, why would they be wearing clothes, taking bath, cutting their hair, doing any of it? You know, they basically, like that. It just wouldn't happen. Right? So, yes. Here is that, therefore, the senses, since they have to be controlled and all that, why not use the regulation of using your life for sense gratification to use the same regulation to control sense gratification? And then controlling that sense gratification, then we can progress in the spiritual life. Does this make sense? So basically he's saying that his father's, how does he learn this? He's learned this because he controls his senses. His father and Sandandamarkha can't understand this because they're not controlling their senses. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, true, according to you, thinking of Krishna is asat. It is non-existent, at least in you. This mentality will never arise in persons like you. Prahlad laughs at his father with these crooked words. From persons like your guru, from yourself, or from combined effort, this inclination does not arise. It does not arise in this father, because this, in his father, oh, okay, does not arise. Internally, however, Prahlad understands that bhakti does not arise in his father, because his father does not have the dust from the feet of the devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.32. Griha vratanam means persons attached to household life. That life is described By uncontrolled senses, they enter hell. So, griha vratanam. So the vrata is household life, rather than the vrata is the grihastha ashram. Right? That's a whole different thing, because then the elements of grihastha life are engaged in Krishna's service in a regulated way. But when it's just about gaining whatever you can, then one won't get anywhere. Serious food. Not as serious as the ones the other day.
Not as loud, but it sounds like they're more.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's by volume they're making noise, but the other ones by a small group they can make so much noise. You know, there is so much more. How you say? You know, developed. Or, yeah. Okay, since the main group is past. Srila Prabhupada adds, in this verse, the words "matir na krishne" refer to devotional service rendered to Krishna. Yes, you can see is that blessing of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is the opposite of this. So-called politicians, erudite scholars, and philosophers who read Bhagavad Gita try to twist some meaning from it to suit their material purposes. But their misunderstandings of Krishna will not yield them any profit. Because such politicians, philosophers, and scholars are interested in using Bhagavad Gita as a vehicle for adjusting things materially. For them, constant thought of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is impossible. Matir, na Krishne. Right? So that's the whole idea, is that Prabhupada's written Bhagavad Gita as it is. Right? And he gets this also from the Acharyas, who make the same point. Krishna also makes this point of as it is. That means this is what it is. We adjust to that. But he's saying that these politicians, scholars, and other philosophers, they try to adjust the Gita to match them. So this is rejected. This we don't do. Right? Kladmars continued. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man attached to external sense objects, cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home back to Godhead and engage in the devotional service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men, led by another materially attached man, are bound by the ropes of fruit of labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. Footnote 23. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 14, entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Additionally, in his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 35, Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse when he writes, when the devotees who dearly love Lord Krishna feel compassion and lament for the non-devotees who have not yet attained Lord Krishna's mercy, that is also karuna rasa. So again, because... Sorry?
How is this connected?
Which one? The Sandarbha?
Unfavorable.
Means in other words, who are those non-devotees who have not yet attained Lord Krishna? Right? Those individuals who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and are following those who have the same mentality.
That's what I understand. We just don't understand what Jiva was saying. I mean, because it says about those who feel compassion.
Yes, but it's talking about...
So they feel compassion for those...
For those that are like this, yes. Like that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Hiranyakashipu argues, O fool, you are criticizing me, your father, whose feet are worshipped by Indra. Listen, foolish boy, do your teachers, greatly learned pupils of Sukracharya, not know the import of scriptures? Do you not think that what they have taught is correct? Prahlad replies, They do not know that Vishnu, who is one's treasure, is the goal. They know only goals like svarga, which are not valuable at all. They have evil hearts and consider sense enjoyment, which is useless, to be valuable. If they do not know what is valuable, how will their pupils know? Right. So, you know, the natural thing is, you know, we're here, we're developed, we're mature, we're elder, so therefore we know things, so that you as a young child, how do you, you know, think that you know better? Right? Because it's always, if nothing else works, then age always is a, you know, position you can pull. You know, because especially when you're talking about sense gratification, then engaging the senses, or, you know, the mind and the senses and all that, that's the standard thing amongst artists, right? And so then for artists, age becomes the most important. Because generally, if you're performing your art, the older you get, the better you get at it, right? So age is actually something of meaning amongst artists. But if for the other three varnas, then age actually doesn't matter. You have someone who's very young, who's very expert at things. You know, like that. You know, it's like those, you know, those, all those garage wallers, you know, and they're in their 20s or early 30s, they're already billionaires, you know, so it's like you have to respect them for what they've done, not their age. Right? Not that they're not respectful to people who are older, but the point is now he's pulling this, so you don't think they know. Yes.
What about experience? Because that you can basically gain this age.
Yes, yes. But also it's a matter of some people are able to be observant, and so they gain more experience in a shorter period of time.
So we imply those as dvijas. Dvijas, they are more observant.
They would tend to be. Like that. But it's also, if someone is better at it, let's say if you have artists, so you may have a younger artist who's actually better at the art than an elder artist, then technically he would, within the art field, be more respectful. But socially, then the elder who is older would be given respect. You know, you would always refer to yourself that, you know, your junior is just somehow or another by, you know, fortune, things are going nicely, but, you know, elders like such as yourself who are so knowledgeable and that, and these are the good, you would tend to do that. Like that, to some extent. But other artists who are intelligent would respect them, but the tendency is they won't. Because that's the problem. Because of the more focus on the mind, the senses, my own enjoyment, even though it's obvious that the other person is better, you can't appreciate it to see. You just see it that they're getting in the way of you getting your respect. So only in dvijas then there'll be a little bit more. But it's not necessary that if they're materialistic that they like it, but they do notice it. Does that make sense? It means they are aware of it. But the more materialistic, they may not appreciate it. You know, but they'll keep that to themselves. But someone who's actually in knowledge, then he'll be able to see and appreciate based on the thing. So those who, but that comes with detachment, which means it's coming from proper knowledge. And so either that's come from great amount of piety, and then sacrifice is one of the more major points of respect. So maybe this life you don't see much, but in previous lives they must have, that if at an earlier age they have such great insight into, you know, the whatever it is that they're doing. So then you have to respect that aspect of sacrifice. Even though it hasn't come from experience in this life, it's come from experience in previous lives. Okay? Or it's come from devotional service, that they're fixed in that, and so therefore then these all these nice qualities come. So, which fighters?
Script writers.
Script writers.
They're born at 55. Means that when they're like fully mature, they're able to like actually like utilize their art. And like according to Jyotish, also it takes a certain amount of years for each planet to get mature. That's why they're there.
Yes. Yeah. Get that. Pladmars continues, unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnav, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, in this way one can become freed from material contamination. Footnote 24. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamarichi Mala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Additionally, in his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 134, paragraph 8, Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse when he writes, Anarthas are destroyed only by the mercy of a devotee, not by the mode of goodness. So, very important is that you're trying to situate yourself in a lifestyle of goodness because that's what's recommended. But it's not the mode of goodness that gets rid of the anartha. Right? It's by the grace of the devotees that the anartha goes. Yes.
Even the favorable condition would be goodness.
That would not be no, it's that you've taken shelter of the devotee. That's the favorable condition. Right? That's the favorite is that okay? Yeah. So his whole point is because his father and his gurus have not received the dust from the lotus feet of the pure devotees, therefore they can't understand this or even know that it exists. But because he's gotten the dust from the lotus feet of Narad Muni, he understands this. Because otherwise the father's like, you know, you think you're better than us, you know more than us, you're just a child. How is it that, you know, Indra is respecting me and here's the sons of Sukracharya? You don't think they don't know what they're talking about, you know? But he's pointed out, they may be very expert in the materialistic aspects of the Vedas, you know, the ritualistic elements, the mechanics of it. But knowing what it's actually for, its purpose, is something else. You know, it's just like we you know, we're even saying on the materialistic point of a causation is that you're the carpenter is doing his work, but still he'll get a result. But what's the purpose of that result? So the whole point is that's the highest point of the causation. Is what's the actual purpose? So they don't know that the purpose is not sense gratification but to please the Lord. So even though they know the technique very well, they may be very good carpenters and can get very good results, they don't know actually what the purpose is. So that's amazing. Yes.
You see him, Prahlad Maharaj, in his presentation of Krishna consciousness, he's very bold.
Yes. Yes.
And it doesn't sound very humble. So when we preach, sometimes, you know, the same happens, that how can you say, you know, so boldly, you know. And then, you know, we quote from scripture this and that, but then people, although on an intellectual level we overpower them, still, on, you know, they have a bad, whatever, aftertaste or feeling. So this is what happens here.
That's there, but also means because he's a child, he can afford to be bold. You know, because Prabhupada says a child can say anything, an old man can do anything. You know, so old men do weird things, everyone just leaves it. You know, but children do weird things, then people won't want to stop. But children can say anything, and people, you know, it's what can you say? But you know, but the old man says anything, and people get upset. So it's just so. He's taking advantage of this aspect, I would say. But you know, but he could back it up because it's good. He's solid with it. But he's just being also straightforward. His father's asking him because they're also you're dealing also in the Kshatriya culture, and they expect things to be very direct and bold, also, because when they ask a question, they don't like, you know, kind of, well, you know, and I was the, you know, they don't like that. So that he's very direct and bold. That's actually how Kshatriyas prefer. And you see, he does nicely. He talks to his father nicely. He you know, oh, best of the demons, and you know, like that. So he's, and you know, the tone of his voice, I'm sure, is quite nice here. So there's no ego or anything like that. So then it's just a matter of the father just doesn't appreciate it.
that, the life with ourselves, there may be some element of the ego or some other aspect there that will be the part that may bother them. Along with that they don't like Krishna consciousness. Like that. So that's where then one adjusts for the audience on what words you use, what tone of voice you use, what kind of examples you use, what pressure you put. But at the same time, you don't change what you're saying. You know, we're used to is that I'm saying this, so I just, you know, I'm just being straightforward. There's that element in the Western culture that if I'm being straightforward and honest, then I don't have to follow any etiquette. So we may fall into that kind of habit. But the idea is, the Vedic is that you say what's correct, and that you don't adjust that, but you adjust your tone. You know, well, if we're going to adjust the tone, we adjust what we say. You know, it's either straightforward and rough, or, you know, very refined, but we, you know, don't really say anything. So we're not used to
that combination.
Yeah.
It's quite developed in Asia. They can say what they want to say,
yeah,
but in a nice way.
Yes. It's because the culture's, you know, from here. And then, you know, so it's been around for some time. You know, though it may not have the naturalness like what we see when the pure devotees are speaking. You know, when Vallad's speaking, Jarabharat's speaking like that. But at least the etiquette's there, like you're saying. You know, underlying you can see the false ego and the resentment and all these different kinds of things. But at least they're not presenting it that way. And if they do it that way, the other person, even they know they're feeling bad, won't take that part, because at least they're following the etiquette. You know, so it's a, you know, interesting combination. But you see here with these great Vaishnavas, then they also have the attitude. So then, because of that, then they can. It's like Prabhupada would be, you know, so many times he'd be dealing in one way, but if by dealing another way it would be effective, he'll use that. You know, so it's not about false egos. That, yeah, I'm going to go out there and, you know, show them and like that. The idea is that if we're supposed to show them, then we use whatever method will actually show them. So sometimes that really strong isn't very effective. Like I was saying before, I was speaking to a group of straight edge, and the more straight you say it, the better they like it. That's a straight edge. They just like it really right in your face. And then they get fired up, they get really inspired. And then a couple of days later, same kind of age group, basically the same kind of looking people, gave a class and used the same technique. They were like flipped out for like 5 hours. The host had to talk for 5 hours afterwards to get them to all calm down and okay, so they understood what I was saying was, you know, trying to benefit, but the method they didn't like. I didn't realize is that, you know, there's a lot of difference between those with tattoos with no color in it and those with tattoos with color in it. So I didn't catch that. It's a big difference. And so, you know, they flip. You know, so, yeah, like that. It's just, you have to know how to change like that. So we will tend to not have that kind of experience, either due to our conditioning or, you know, the ego and that, like that. But as we advance in Krishna consciousness, naturally the sensitivity develops also. So then it also makes it easier to make that adjustment. Yes?
Is it necessary to study the audience before we preach Govinda?
What do you mean by study? You get out your magnifying glass. What do you mean by
study? Means if you come to know the class of people that you are preaching with.
Means that means before you start preaching, or once you get there and meet them.
Before we start, which is a group that other colleagues.
If you have that option and all that, it always helps. But the point is you go by whatever mood and that is happening in with that group of people at the time. What I'm saying, because you're going, and as you're seeing what you're saying, is it getting the effect? If it is, then you continue that. If it's not, you adjust. Okay. So just with time, you get that experience.
Does that make sense? You know, and if you're sharper, you'll pick it up sooner, and if you're not as sharp, it'll take you a little longer. It's not that what we're talking about here is you're using the verminical technique, but you're also adjusting, you're not adjusting what you're saying. It's just that when you're saying it, you may follow, you know, see that the language is appreciated by the audience. So you're actually going to a level above that. It's the brahminical, because the kshatriyas are talking gentle, but it's political. In other words, it'll be political correctness or whatever it is that's there. It'd be diplomacy for that. Political correctness is technically for shudras, like that, you know, bless their souls, but, you know, whatever. So they say actually that would be improper to say is for shudras. No, the correct term would be that's for Dvija Bandhus. Yeah. It means there's not a whole lot of difference between the two, but in other words, those that are coming from a higher intellectual position who think that they're so intellectual, but they're actually using the, values of Shudras, that would be where political correctness is important, right? Kshatriyas will use diplomacy because they know its diplomacy is changing as it goes. But those who talk political correctness actually think the political correctness is truth. But Kshatriyas know diplomacy is never truth. You understand? They're more smart. In other words, Kshatriyas are more smart than these others. Right? So, yeah. So therefore, you're addressing non-truth by dealing in the area where the person would think this is truthful. Does that make sense? It would be just like if you're talking to cheaters, then you talk in a language that's cheating. Like that. But you're only doing that for them because that's what works, not that you think cheating's good. But you can't be honest with the cheater. Yeah. They wouldn't appreciate it, they'll take advantage. So there's no benefit in being honest with the cheater. So political correctness means it's political. And it's the correct way to be political. Not its correctness, and you're just adjusting for the politics. It's the other way around. So there'll be some difference there. Right, so for the Brahmins, they're speaking the truth, and they don't not speak the truth. So they're not going to make adjustments with diplomacy, right? They'll make adjustments with what kind of, like we said, what kind of wording they use, what kind of examples, what kind of intensity or tone of voice they use. So you can say it's an adjustment would be along the line of diplomacy, but what you're speaking is not diplomatic. Yes. So that's the difference. So say the Brahmins, it's not that their speaking is sharp, it's to the point. It's as it is, but it doesn't mean it has to be harsh. So we can't say, oh, I'm a Brahmin, so I can speak harshly. And the point is it's supposed to be, you know, properly said, but there's a difference is that you're trying to establish the absolute truth while the Kshatriya is trying to get something accomplished. Right? Yes, it means it's in pursuance of the absolute, but they're working with the mechanics of applying it into the particular social environment. That makes sense. So it's not necessarily as straightforward. But as we mentioned before, they like things, people that are, if they're intense, they like people that are bold.
you know, it's hard. It's, in other words, it's not as easy to speak in front of those who have this very intense administrative abilities, because they'll be straightforward when they want. If, in other words, if it's advantageous to be diplomatic, they will, but if it's not, they won't. It's not that they'll always be diplomatic. Okay. Okay, so Anartha is destroyed not only by the mercy of a devotee, are destroyed only by the mercy of a devotee, not by the mode of goodness. Right. So the mode of goodness is not going to get rid of the Anarthas of material enjoyment. The mode of goodness will give, you know, knowledge and detachment on a light level because of its nature, but it won't remove material desire. Right? It just means that your material desire will be more refined. Someone who's materialistic in the mode of goodness, their sense of enjoyment will be more refined. You know, nicer clothes, nicer food, nicer fragrance, nicer discussions, nicer topics, nicer words, nicer, cleaner environments, but they're still just as materialistic. That's the mistake. We think, oh, goodness is the thing. But it's the natural lifestyle, because if you're living pure goodness, the lifestyle would have the form of goodness. It's the consciousness that makes it pure. So the lifestyle would be the same, just the materialist is using it for sense enjoyment while the devotee is using it for the pleasure of the Lord. You don't get a better lifestyle than the mode of goodness. Right? But the consciousness shouldn't be mode of goodness, it should be pure goodness. So, makes sense. So it's limited. Otherwise, if you want to work on goodness is going to make things work, then count in some thousands of lifetimes. Otherwise, it's not going to work. You know, it's like we said, probably mentioned that Ravi Shankar. He'd been, you know, practice playing sitar for 1,000 lifetimes. Right? So that means that, and you know, his teacher. If you weren't already playing your instrument or practicing music at 5 in the morning, then he'd toss you out of the school. You know, it's like, you know, whenever you got up, you just. He'd be there with the ticket and just hand you the ticket and say, leave. So that means that every day regulated that they're doing, they would do 10 to 12 hours a day practice. Any of these North Indian wallahs, 10 to 12 hours a day practice with big professionals. They do less than that, then they can't keep up. So that means they're very regulated and all that. But you see, it took him 1,000 lifetimes to get to where he is. And he only knows 25% of what his teacher taught. You know? So it looks like the teacher was 4,000 lifetimes. You know? Like that. So mode of goodness is really slow. But that it's the fastest of them. Passion will be even slower. Mode of ignorance, then, you know, you're talking about 8,400,000. Yes.
Would you be more likely to attract the mercy of the devotees if your consciousness was in goodness?
It's not so much that as that you have more of a tendency to take advantage because you can see the benefit of it. You can see that it's good. So if you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, there's not as much passion and ignorance to get in the way of the intelligence. So it's more likely that you'll see. You know, it's like, in other words, someone in goodness, if they have problems, so, you know, financial problems, emotional problems, you know, intellectual problems like that, they'll tend to surrender to the Lord. Well, those in passion and ignorance, they tend to just make up a new plan, or they never had a plan in the beginning. Right? They don't even know that things are miserable. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's advantageous, but it's not actually the cause of destroying anarthas. Because here we mean anarthas means the material desire. You know, it may be, okay, the mode of goodness we can see is behaving in a nicer way, following etiquette, you know, being dutiful, that's better. But that's not what we're talking, that's still, what's our purpose of doing that? It's still for material enjoyment, right? On the material platform.
So it's not that you've gotten rid of the anartha. You've just refined it, upgraded it, you know, to a better level. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's why it says only by the mercy of devotee can anarthas be destroyed. They're not going to be destroyed by goodness. So this idea is, oh, we have to be moral, we have to be good, we have to be nice. Great. You know, it's a recommended lifestyle. But the whole point is the actual improvement and development is only going to happen because of the mercy of the devotees. It's not going to happen because you're a nice guy. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's why we don't focus that much on these lower levels of consciousness. Like that. For us, it's a beginning level of kind of what level of mundane consciousness is Dharma. Artha Kama, we don't consider as that valuable. Because it too much, it, how you say, it definitely makes one distracted by it. As we mentioned, it was, what was it, Swanishta? You had Swanishta, Parinishta, and Nirapeksha. Yeah, it was Swanishta, wasn't it? Yeah. So, in their own kind of idea, they're fixed. You know, the Swanishta, rather than transcendental Parinishta. So, they are engaging their activities, they're connecting to the Lord, but they're very much enamored by their own activities. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, now we're talking about, generally we'd be talking about someone who's following Dharma, so they're distracted by that Dharma. But that's at least mode of goodness, what you're supposed to do, let alone if it's Upadharma, it's lower than that. And it's just because that's the socially accepted norm, and that's seen as that's what will get you the material benefits. And so that's really going to be distracting. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
I think in Sri Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains all the anarthas.
Yes.
And then he very clearly he says that they are destroyed by the grace of the Guru, Krishna or Balaram.
Yes.
It's not like by lifestyle, just called
the way. Yes, 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 very good. Yes. Because all three of them be Guru.
Yes.
Like
different
that.
Manifestations.
Yeah, different manifestations. Yes.
Actually, we talk about that they are destroyed by the Guru. So it should be in conscious, we are talking about Guru. Not
only by the mercy.
Yeah, by the mercy.
Not so, that Guru gets in there with a stick and
but it should be
beats the arguments, you know. So stand back, you know. Like that,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, it would be very nice.
Yeah.
And then you sit there, you know, eating your popcorn while the Guru's in charge.
You take those that
I
destroyed.
Yeah. Oh, watch out. Then, you know, especially tougher than ninja anarthas, you know, like that. So, yeah.
Okay, I guess my question
would be. Or the assassin anarthas, like that, they're really tough also.
So it should be conscious mercy towards the disciple, or just the general one?
The point is as Prabhu was pointing out, is that the Guru himself, Balaram, or Krishna himself, they're the ones that are removing these anarthas, right? So the point is you're performing your duties of following the instruction of Guru. So whether Guru himself knows that you're doing that or not, Krishna does. You know, or you can say it's Balaram as Paramatma, he knows. So then because that's Krishna's direction, is follow Guru, and then you become purified. Therefore, by the mercy of Adi Guru, then it becomes removed. And then if he's conscious himself, and it says, then that also is done by, you know, Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees. You know, so either way, whether they know or not, you know, so you don't have to sit around and say, no, you know, like that, you know, it's like that. You don't have to do that. Yes.
So in this connection, if you're doubting bhakti, then you're slowing down the whole process and you're just defining yourself with the mercy of
God. Yes, this is the point is here it's saying because of the materialism, therefore the idea of bhakti won't even arise. So it's not even that there's a doubt Because doubt means you don't know if it's this or that. Here it's a matter, it doesn't even arise that it's even a value. Yeah, so there's just no interest. It's only by coming in contact with devotees, then there'll be some point. Then there may be a doubt. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments. Becoming Krishna conscious, that's not where we are? Because we did the footnote.
Although
Kalam is only 5 years old. Yeah. Page 88. Oh, okay. Finding out what page we're on. Says. We're not on 133. Okay. Becoming Krishna conscious brings about anartha apagamana, or apagamaha, the disappearance of all anarthas, the miserable conditions we have unnecessarily accepted. Right. So it's pointing out the anarthas are what causes the misery. So that's the material desire and everything. So we've accepted the material desire with the idea we'll be happy, but it actually just gives us misery. It didn't quite work out the way we wanted it. Like that. The material body is the basic principle of these unwanted miserable conditions. The entire Vedic civilization is meant to relieve one from these unwanted miseries. But persons bound by the laws of nature do not know the destination of life. As described by the previous verse, Isha Tantriyam Uru Dhamni Badhaha. They are conditioned by the three strong modes of material nature. Right? So the Vedic, it says, Prabhupada says, the entire Vedic civilization is meant to relieve one. So anything where it's engaging oneself in activities, the senses, is actually the purpose of regulating them to elevate you to a higher platform. That's the whole purpose of it. It's not for anything else. It's not meant for sense gratification. It's meant that people are attached to sense gratification, how to regulate the sense gratification so that they can elevate themselves. And so he says the whole, right? He says the entire. So it's not that, oh, that's only parts of it. Oh, that, yeah, that's okay. That's for the devotees, say like that. No, it's the whole thing's like that. So that's why then it becomes difficult for many to accept the Vedic culture. Or they'll accept some of the sciences, arts and sciences, without actually the culture that goes along with it. Right? There's a lifestyle. You want to be an astrologer, there's a lifestyle that goes along with it. You know, like we mentioned, you want to be a musician today, you're up in the morning. When I'm in South India, and when I talked about 5 o'clock, that was in North India. But I remember in South India, at 3 in the morning, you'd hear them playing music. Right? And this wasn't because they were up all night and all that. That's North India does that stuff. South India, they go to bed on time, get up early. You know, it's just sadhana. So instead of chanting their japa, they're doing their sadegamas. Right? You know, that's the difference. Yeah. So they do like that. So it's a matter of, there is always regulating the senses. There isn't, but so we'll take it and just take the thing and take the mechanics of it and use it as we like. But that's not actually how it's given, because everything comes along with it. You know, like with Ayurveda, there's a lifestyle that comes with it. Dinacharya, Ritucharya. There's no such thing as just you just take the medical things you like and live what lifestyle you like. No, you have to live the lifestyle.
It's very hard sometimes to explain this to children, not really small, really older, because they see, if they follow, it's very hard. But everybody else, more or less, they don't follow anything, and seems to be no sequences they only enjoy. As kids, they don't see the...
But then you have to explain everything. But then, the main point is that one has to be willing to, when they do catch it, that they're going to comment on your lifestyle. we've had many, many parents. They just can't handle that the kid knows more and corrects them while they're the adult. You know, it's just like Narendra has to do.
So the kids learn something of the culture and why they should do it, and they're willing to accept it. They go home, the parents not doing it, and then they comment on it, and the parents get, it means like, bent out of shape would be a euphemism. Like that. They actually go ballistic and they totally freak out. So they can't handle that, you know. So the point is you explain it and all that, then, but you have to keep explaining it because they don't necessarily have the maturity, they can't make distinctions for time, place, and circumstance. You'll be doing something that is actually not in line with what you've told them in the way of the form of it. You know, and so then they're going to comment on that, and then you have to explain the higher level of how these other things are in place and how it all still works, so you mature their understanding.
I mean, when they look at other kids.
Oh, when they look at other kids, yeah, they'll make comments.
They don't do it because the other kids, they don't do anything and seem to be enjoying. It's very hard for those who do something to justify this because they also want to enjoy, basically.
That's why in the Vedic system, houses were large. I forget what it was. Someone was telling me they were reading this book. It was written by this one aristocratic girl from Calcutta. I don't know what the time was. But whatever was outside was in their house. They had their own swimming pools, they had their own, whatever it is that they wanted to do, that outside was the popular thing, like playing tennis, they had it inside their house. I don't mean little dinky things, I mean they had big houses, so, you know. But we don't work on that principle, so therefore we, you know what I'm saying. You also have the element that's what community is for. So therefore you move amongst those parents and, you know, and their children have the same values. It's for the kids, it's not that they need to go visit everybody, they just visit those ones that are that have the same values. And when they do meet those other kids, that they can see them doing stuff, but if they go up to them and try to be nice to them, those kids won't be nice back. Yes. You know, so therefore you just avoid them. So with time they just learn, just don't bother with other people. You know, it's not nice, you can say, oh, but we're all a community, but we're not. Not on that, not on the social platform. Devotional, yes. Philosophical, yes. But social, then everybody's in their own groups. So you find those groups that have the same values, stick to them. Doesn't matter even if it's one other family, that's enough. You know, it may not sound so ideal, but the material world, since when has it been ideal? As described in the previous verse, Isha Tantriyam Uru Dhamni Badaha, they are conditioned by the three strong modes of material nature. The education that keeps the conditioned soul bound life after life is called materialistic education. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that materialistic education expands the influence of Maya. Such an education induces the conditioned soul to be increasingly attracted to materialistic life and to stray further and further away from liberation from unwanted miseries. So then in here also, because it's Prahlad Maharaj is there, it's about, you know, the education and all that. This will come up much more later when he's training the other children in the Gurukul. That the modern education is what adults feel will be valuable for their children in materialistic life. That's what it is. It's generally taken, okay, education is knowledge, so therefore it's glorious in itself. But the point is all these, any kind of knowledge or activity, it's only glorious when it's connected to the Lord. So you can use knowledge for material purposes. You can use money for material purposes, senses for material purposes, social status for material purposes. But if you use it for Krishna conscious, only then it becomes glorious. So the idea, no, but it's education, you know, it's good, like that. Good for what? Right? So that's the whole point, is that if you say, no, but you have to have this to have a job, okay. But then the whole point is what's the job for? To maintain what? Right? It says you can't maintain yourself unless you have a job. Okay, but what's yourself?
What is that lifestyle that you're maintaining? So if that's mundane, then what's the point? If it's spiritual, then okay, learning these things are there. But then, if that's there, therefore, it will reflect in the lifestyle. Right? It'll reflect how you behave, how you value, how you deal, like that. And we don't see that in modern education. It only reflects the mundane desire that the adults have. Yes.
So we can say, if we take education on three levels, values, knowledge, and skills.
Yes.
So then material education is basically skills and some parts of knowledge, but never values of life.
No, never values. It means inherently there's values. Value is sense gratification.
Well, that's the value.
That's the value in modern, is sense gratification. And the skills are, means, yeah, they give the knowledge so you can do the skills. But the point is, the skills aren't for, are, they don't connect them. You know, bless their souls, but they don't show how they connect. You may have an individual teacher who will connect it for you, but how often are those?
Or connect to the individual.
That, or connect the knowledge that shows that, yes, if you, this knowledge here connects to this skill, and by that benefit, then you can obtain this value. How often do you, I can remember one teacher, I can remember once talking about, you know, further values, I mean, you know, further things in life. Another teacher talking about the long-term effect economically in your life. And another teacher who was talking about proper behavior and just, you know, the social values and all that. But they would always behave like that, but I only remember them each talking about it once. And so those three teachers, and I think my third grade teacher, they're the only ones I remember out of, you know, all the years of school. And, you know, so many teachers. Like that. Because there was some idea that they were trying to connect it, and like that, or live it, or something. But it's not, but it's not part of the system. It's not part of the system. The system is just they have their particular syllabus, and that's it. And as long as that gets across, the children follow whatever's the accepted test and do grade well, then the rest of it doesn't matter. You know, a kid can be actually terrible, but if he gets good marks, that's what's going to go down in the school. You know what I'm saying? It'll be known, okay, this school got, you know, this much percentage and these marks. They don't tell how nice they are, how bad they are, like that. So whatever one may say about the modern system, it doesn't actually give values and all that, other than materialistic values. You know. Or those who go for the modern education and the higher levels, they tend to think because they have that, that places them in a more advanced stage. You know, it's kind of like, oh, I studied philosophy in university, naturally I know more than someone who studied philosophy in Krishna consciousness. You know, we're talking devotees here. Karmis, of course. So that's the difficulty, is there's a thought that it's because it's giving that materialistic value, that status, that, you know, so naturally I have this, I have a higher status, I have a better position. But as it mentions, that's devotional service in the mode of ignorance. That you think because of your material qualifications, therefore you're advanced. So therefore, then when we base our own education on this knowledge, skills, and values from the modern context, then we're saying I'm more developed because I have developed this modern mentality. That's why I'm more advanced. But in actuality, is that what's the meaning of this? Because when you say knowledge, skills, and values, it sounds great. But knowledge means shravanam. You've heard submissively from a teacher. Is that taught? No. Skills means I have the from the knowledge I got the skill. Now I'm contemplating that skill. I'm practicing that skill. And then having practice, I'm again reanalyzing and contemplating its effectiveness and everything and its value.
like that. Then that will give me the value of, you know, how it is used in Krishna consciousness, how it actually connects with the lifestyle and all that. Otherwise, the modern is, I have knowledge, so knowledge, of course, is important. Skill, I have a skill so I can get a job. And a value means, you know, I'm a good guy. You know, I'm truthful, I'm upstanding, I'm responsible, like that. It's not value means is that you understand the whole purpose behind it. So it's taking the superficial elements of Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, that it just sounds great and it's something you can focus on, because Shravana Manana Nididhyasana takes actually some thought and maturity and practice to understand. Well, if I say knowledge, skills, and values, you know, it's just three words that just, you know, rolls off the tongue. So it sounds great. But the actual depth of it is not being taught, you know, in the modern educational approach, wherever it's being applied.
So it's anamoya pranamoya.
That's as good as it gets. Because the point is, this value should be values in the shastra, at least minimum it should be dharma. And then moksha bhakti is your best. But here it just means that, you know, how you say value, you know, the economic, the how you say justice, morality, that level, because that's as far as modern knows. So how can they teach? So if you use them as a model, you can't get any more than that. You know what I'm saying? If I use a hammer, I'm not going to cook lunch. You know, I can bang some nails, but that's it. It's not going to cook lunch. So same way, you use the modern educational system, you can't get it as a system beyond that. Unless you use the Veda, because it's the only thing that's beyond. You know, because the modern doesn't even know there's beyond. Like we were discussing about, they talk about the five levels of consciousness. You know, there's one philosopher, like that. But when you hear about the five levels of consciousness, and they use his philosophy, I think it's Hume?
Hegel.
Huh?
How would you say Hegel?
Hegel. Okay. So then it starts to sound like it's us, and it makes, you know, very much sense, is that he's starting with, you know, self-centered, right? And then the next is you notice others. Or, you know, and then, oh, excuse me, you notice other things outside yourself. Then you notice others, then you notice the world, then there's the, you know, transcendental. But in that, so it seems like it connects to the five levels of consciousness, but it never gets beyond pranamoya. Because it's about myself, then I notice my environment around me, which is also can be used for sense gratification. I'm just more scientific. It's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. There's the gross sense enjoyer, then there's the one who's more scientific in his sense enjoyment. So he's able to manipulate the material energy because he's able to analyze it. Then you see others, but it doesn't mean that it's not an extension of yourself. You only see those people that are connected to your sense gratification. Right? And so I see them, and so I learn the etiquette there. Then there's the world, because I'm going to fit in a bigger world to get my sense gratification. So it's still all these made-up values. There's nothing coming from absolutes. Then I say there's what's beyond that, because if there's anything that's, I just say some good quality, being truthful or honest, I'll generally take that as transcendental, as spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So we can see is that the whole range within what Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives within Anamoy and Pranamoy is all the farther he gets. But because he does talk about the five and all that, we can talk about the five, and they'll catch that there's something there in the Vedic. And when we explain it, they'll see more. But what they're talking about is not. So therefore, the modern educational system is based on basically trying to get you out of Anamoy into Pranamoy. But it's not saying about giving up sense gratification. It just means, you know, you should share. You know, you should get your sense gratification connected to the world. So, as a philosophy, it's already faulty. So then, the whole approach, even if you put into it something really nice, it's still going to have the fault of its origins. You know, it's just like when you like Madhu's mentioned, someone from a mixed background, they follow the Vedic lifestyle, but when the going gets tough, then, you know, their own nature comes out. So it's only by devotional service that they can go beyond that nature. So on the material platform, they won't. So you have that, so you can say, okay, well, we'll engage it in the Lord's service, but how is it being engaged? That comes down to it. That needs to be explained. And as of yet, I have yet to hear someone explain it. You know, so in the last 30 years dealing with education, I have not heard anyone explain it yet. But they talk about the importance and the need and its value and all this kind of stuff like that. But actually how to connect it, how you're going to get that across the student, there is no method. Other than, okay, we'll have a Krishna conscious class. But then that's using our method. But the method itself, how the other doesn't have any connection. Is that what it means?
In Russia, even the karmis themselves are saying that modern education has no substance, it's a waste of time, and huge amount of Lakshmi. They say in high school, they say forget everything about middle school, in college, they say forget everything about high school, in university, they say forget about college, and in job, they say forget everything you've learned.
Yeah. It's true. It is.
Right?
Yeah. So yes, it's just to keep them busy.
Yeah.
Like that. See, because before means if you went back in time where it was a bit more practical, boys would go into the workforce at 12. You know, could. Go into the workforce at 12. Because the amount of English and math that you require, a language that you need, is not any more than you would have gained by the time you're 12. The reading level, at least in English, is always 12 plus. That means a 12-year-old could read it, and someone older could read it. So that's all the more it is. Right? And math that people use in day-to-day life is generally only addition and subtraction, occasionally multiplication and division. Who uses algebra? Who uses geometry? Who uses trigonometry? Right? Unless you're specialized in your job, but in your personal life, you just don't use it. Right? So that means is by the time you're 12, you're ready to go out into the world. Right? Now there's a slight problem. How much will a 12-year-old work for? Right? Get a little money, buy a few sweets, you know, fix his bicycle. He's good. Right? But now an adult with a family and children, he needs a lot more. So now when it comes down to it, since the 12-year-old can do the same job as the 40-year-old, then who wants 40-year-olds? They'll take the 12-year-olds. Right? But now, you string them on until they're 18. What happens by 18?
Ego.
Ego's there, but in line with what we just said. By that time, then the boys and girls are attached to each other. Therefore, then now they have to think about homes and mortgages and that. So then now they'll be on the same par. You understand? So, because otherwise before it was, you know, you start work whenever you can do it. You know? Yeah. So these are modern things. It's not that you're going to gain anything more. Okay. One may ask why highly educated persons do not take to Krishna consciousness. The reason is explained in this verse. Unless one takes shelter of a bona fide, fully Krishna conscious spiritual master, there's no chance of understanding Krishna. So that means taking shelter of following their instructions. So if you take their instructions and follow it, then you get benefit. But if you don't take, or you only take what you like, then you won't get all the understanding. So one who has complete faith in Guru and Krishna, everything's revealed. But someone who only likes to pick and choose what they like about Krishna consciousness, then only those areas will be revealed and other areas will not. Right? Yeah. So the whole point is it's not how much knowledge you have or how much skill you have. It's how much mercy you get from the devotees. That's the point. That's there, you advance. That's not there, you don't advance. That's all. Because we're talking about transcendental. It's not of this world. Right? Have you heard that the love for someone, you know, is their skill, by how much skill they have, then their love for Krishna increases, you know, in the spiritual world or all that? You know what I'm saying? It's not there. They have the love for Krishna, and then to match that love, they have the skills. Like the cowherd boys, they have a particular affection for Krishna.
But have we ever heard that any of the cowherd boys know how to cook? Right? Not that they don't, but it never comes up once. Right? Isn't it?
But they know how to eat.
They know how to eat, yes. Because Krishna eats, and so they can eat along with him and like that. But, you know, the mother Yashoda knows how to cook because that matches her mood with Krishna. So the skills match what they can do. Right? Does that make sense? You know, like that. Yes, they know how to eat. Especially Madhu Mangal. He's the acharya. Narad Muni continued. After Prahlad Maharaj had spoken in this way and become silent. Right? So again, you see, he speaks, he says what he wants to say, and then he stops. Because then now it's the other person, if they want to say something or, you know, they've asked a question, you've answered it. Not that you keep on going and keep on going. Like that. It's just he said, he stopped. Hiranyakashipu, blinded by anger, right? Before he was a bit annoyed, but now he's like totally blinded by anger.
Take out his moment.
Yeah. yeah, you know. Threw him off his lap and onto the ground. Indignant and angry, his reddish eyes like molten copper, Hiranyakashipu said to his servants, "O demons, take this boy away from me. He deserves to be killed. Kill him as soon as possible. This boy Prahlad is the killer of my brother, for he has given up his family to engage in devotional service to the enemy, Lord Vishnu, like a menial servant." You know? So here it's also, you know, he's taken up the service of Vishnu, you know, like a menial servant, which is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, so they, you know, like that. You know, so. Footnote 25. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verse 35. "But it is well known that Vishnu killed your brother. He is Vishnu. How is that? He worshipped Vishnu like a servant. Though he is the son of a demon king, he is Vishnu because Vishnu gives a similar form to his servants. Therefore, kill him." Right? So he's actually talking the philosophy, because the devotee is non-different from the Lord, in that he represents the Lord in the, you know, the devotional service and in the philosophy. So in this way, then he becomes the Lord, and so since his purpose is to kill Vishnu, therefore then he should kill the devotee. But because he's seeing it in this way and recognizes the devotee as Vishnu, can he kill Vishnu? No, so therefore he won't be able to kill the devotee. "Although Prahlad is only 5 years old, even at this young age he has given up his affectionate relationship with his father and mother. Therefore he is certainly untrustworthy. Indeed, it is not at all believable that he will behave well towards Vishnu." Like, as he's thinking, you know, if he's not behaving well towards me, why would he behave well towards anyone else? So he's just thinking he's just bad all the way around. "Indeed," okay, "although a medicinal herb being born in the forest does not belong to the same category as a man, if beneficial, it is kept very carefully. Similarly, if someone outside one's family is favorable, he should be given protection like a son. On the other hand, if a limb of one's body is poisoned by disease, it must be amputated so that the rest of the body may live happily. Similarly, even one's own son, if unfavorable, must be rejected, although born of one's own body." Right? So these, what he's speaking here, these are also elements that are mentioned. Manu will mention like this and that. But it's mentioning if they're actually not following properly the Vedic culture. So Hiranyakashipu's ideas, the Vedic culture, is for sense gratification, not worship of Vishnu. So then he will see he's a deviant because he's worshipping Vishnu instead of using it for sense gratification. So in this way, then, he can be rejected. Because even the king has to be very careful. He can't be favorable to his son if his son is behaving improperly. So then, according to his demoniac understanding of, you know, the scriptures, of what's, you know, morality in that, then he's correct. He's just got the opposite understanding of what's the purpose of these rules. Yes?
But can we say that he was actually following the proper schools of self, like Yamini all those?
You could say on that, yes. It means he's following, we see his everything he's saying is according to the Vedic literatures, but his interpretation of it's wrong. You know, just like you have the Vedic literatures and you have six schools of philosophy. So in him, it's just gross sense gratification. Right? So yes, it would be like that. So then because now Prahlad is discussing, you know, the Vaishnava Siddhanta, Uttari Mamsa, then he'll consider that's improper. You know, so he's the bane of his family and things like that. So he's taking what because the Vedic literature means is you're not following what the proper rules and all that are. Well, he is, Prahlad Maharaj. But because the values of the demons are different, they'll say he's not. So they're applying those rules there. So in their society, it will work. You know, but it doesn't mean that when you transcend it and go to the higher that you should apply it. It means he's not respecting his father. You know, he's a gross materialist like his father, but he's not respecting his father. That should be dealt with. But here he's respecting his father in the way of etiquette, but not in the way of his values. So then the problem's coming. So Hiranyakashipu applying these rules on Prahlad is actually incorrect. Because these rules are meant for elevating, not for sense gratification.
When we say, sometimes people say that after a certain level we can educate our children.
We can.
We can.
Yes.
And we have to. That's the duty of the parent.
Yes.
But after a certain level, you did what you did, and that's their choice.
You do have, but the point is does the parent not always... It's like... Is it a matter of you can have influence or not? If you can, you will still try to guide in the right direction. If you can't, then what can you do? You know. So you have to see is this a statement of maturity or is this a statement of laziness?
Despair.
Despair. But you know, you would try to make it sound good. Like I said, when we had the kids in the school, and you have kids that are wild, right? They come to the school, then with time they start to settle down, and you know it seems like you can deal with them. So then naturally, because the parent will feel that you know they like the kids around and things like that, so they decided, okay, we'll pull the kid out because we can continue from here. Because you know how much are we able to do? Like that. And so then some years later, I think the kid was 13, right? Very volatile age, you know. Dangerous time to pull the kid out. Then I saw later when the kid would have been 16, and now the father before, you know, is saying, you know, about, no, I have to teach him. It can't be the school teaching. You know, I'm the father. I have to do that. I have to do, you know, I, like that. So then then I saw him when the kid was 16. So, you know, how's the kid? You know, it's just, we have to, you know, let them, like what you're saying, you know, make their own choices in life and that. We just, you know, show them path and it's up to them. In other words, he couldn't train his kid. His kid walked out on it. So at 16, he's not even with the parents anymore. He's off doing his own thing. But now he's looking at it from a very, you know, lofty, ideal kind of thing, you know, like that. So, you know, better they're looking at it like that than getting all grumpy, because at least they can go on with their service and all that. But that's not actually the purpose of being a parent.
It's just like justifying your own weaknesses.
You're justifying your own weaknesses, yeah. So one has to be careful. But if it's a matter of maturity, is that they're 16, they're making their own choices, you know, you can only, as a friend, try to help. Like that. But before 16, that's when you're supposed to actually show, but did they educate them and why to do the different things? Like that. You know, because with education, you see people change. Whether they can maintain it or not, you know, that's another thing. But if you educate them why they do these different things, that'll have the most effect. But generally, it's like the parents, much of the time, don't have the time for that. So it's just, this is what you should do, and that's all, not why you should do it. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. The teachers, it's parental rasa, but they can teach. Well, the parents is parental rasa, and much of the time they can't because of the proximity, the closeness. So that's why the Vedas, then, is mother, father, teacher. So with that combination, then you can train the child.
Are we talking about voice?
Yeah. Like that. But still, girls, you have to train them also. I mean, girls, you know, very loose, very wild. One day, somehow or another, came around, we were talking and explaining what happens. You're doing this, and you're thinking it's great because you're getting the attention from the boys. But actually, the boys don't care about you. They just care about having fun with a girl. So the farther they can take it, the more happy they are. It's not that they're furthering their relation with you. They don't care about you. They just care you're a girl, you look nice, and hey, they can get something. Like that, you know. And then from that day on, when she walked off, she had her head covered and shy and stayed out of the way. You know, because then she saw, oh, that is what's happening. Because before, other girls are doing, she just thinks this is the thing and it's exciting and all that. But she didn't realize that it's exciting, but you're also, you know, shooting yourself in the foot. So then, you know, these girls that have that exciting time, they're also the ones that have, you know, negative ideas that relationships, they don't think relationships can work, no one's committed, no one cares about anybody else like this. Other girls that follow it, they follow in that, and the family takes care, so they have faith that they can have relationships. Okay? Does that make sense? So when that's explained, then they change. Is that something? You know, so that's the whole idea, is that if it is explained, then that's nice. You know, so that's the point, is that the mother is supposed to be explaining to the daughter, father to the son. You know, mother can also explain to the son in that younger, you know, that religious aspect and all that. But, you know, otherwise then you have that's where the teacher comes from. So in families, then that's where grandparents come in. Because grandparents can speak really straight, but because there's no attachment, then they can be really pleasant about it. They just say it's so matter of fact, it's just like, you know, getting hit over the head with a sack of potatoes or something, you know. Like that, it's just, you know, it's like, oh. Because when the parents say it's all with emotion and attachment and this, and, you know, they're attached that you will do it, the grandparent just says it. You want to do it, then fine. You don't want to do it, hey, it's your life. You want to be miserable for the next 50 years before you figure it out, go ahead. But if you're smart, you'll take it now. So, therefore, then, within the family, then the grandparents are very important.
My observation, the perception of the parents, like, the parents' perception of the child is a little intoxicated, meaningly.
Because of attachment. Yeah, that's what we're meaning. That's why we're saying the grandparent, it's not their child. It's their child's child. So therefore, all the responsibilities with the child, not with them. So therefore, but they have affection, so they'll speak straight. But the parent, out of attachment, thinks that just because I said it, they'll do it. You know, it means whatever I feel, they'll naturally feel. The grandparents don't see like that. They see is that you explain it to them, then they'll understand it. So that's why in the whole thing is ideally you have, you know, in a family, all three generations that are devotees. Right? Because then you get the whole thing. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada comments, having determined to kill even his son, Hiranyakashipu gave the example of amputating a part of one's body that has become septic and therefore injurious to the rest of the body. The same example, of course, may be applied to non-devotees. Chanaki Pandit advises, Chyaja Durjana Samsargam Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam. The devotee is actually serious about advancing in spiritual life, should give up the company of non-devotees and always keep company with devotees. To be too attached to material existence is ignorance, because material existence is temporary and miserable. Therefore, devotees who are determined to perform tapasya, penances and austerities, to realize the self, and who are determined to become advanced in spiritual consciousness, must give up the company of atheistic non-devotees. Prahlad Maharaj maintained an attitude of non-cooperation with the philosophy of his father, Hiranyakashipu, yet he was tolerant and humble. Right? So that's where the culture comes in. He's tolerant and humble, so he's dealing properly, but he's not cooperating. So that's the whole point, is that when in dealing,
with authority. It means you don't, if what's being said is not correct, you don't have to agree,
but you still follow the etiquette.
It's not because they're wrong on that, then you don't follow the etiquette. That's the more, you know, that's more our background. But, you know, those are the followers of the Vedic culture. Then they always respect authority. Now, if they don't, if they, what they're saying is not correct, it still doesn't mean that you give up that proper dealings. The modern thing is that if there's any fault, then we can throw out everything because they're not authority, they're not this, they're not that, they're, you know, like that. So it's not actually a elevated, you know, culturally it's not very developed. So, yes. Hiranyakashipu, however, being a non-devotee, was so polluted that he was even prepared to kill his own son. Right, so his attachment goes beyond. You follow things as long as it's going along with your sense gratification, but when it goes outside of that, then they see, they break down, they lose that humility and tolerance. Hiranyakashipu continued, just as uncontrolled senses are the enemies of all yogis engaged in advancing in spiritual life, this Prahlad, who appears to be a friend, is an enemy because I cannot control him. Therefore, this enemy, whether eating, sitting, or sleeping, must be killed by all means. Right? So now he's starting off with using an example within yoga and things like that. So it's an elevated thing. But it means that they're going to progress here because he's only thinking about yoga to get benefits, like to get siddhis. He's not thinking about yoga to connect to Vishnu. Right? But he knows because he did it himself, so he followed very strictly. Yes.
It also sounds a bit like a justification.
Yes. And then, but you see, he goes into niti. You know, therefore the enemy, whether eating, sitting, or sleeping, must be killed by all means. Because on Dharma and all that, you're not going to bother them at these times. You know, the sun goes down, the conscience is blown, the war ends, they go back to their tents, you don't bother anybody. You might even go over to their tent and have some discussions or, you know, have a meal together, anything like that. But here, then he's talking about even they are, you know, eating, sitting, or sleeping, they kill them anyways, you see, in the modern kind of scenario. So that, because the point is you can catch them at this point. Yes.
So in the Western philosophy, Machiavelli, he's the closest to the need.
Yes. Yes, it's just whatever it takes to get it done. Because it means you've accomplished it. But the point is you've also lost all the culture and all the other things along with it. Yeah, all that goes. So that's why, as we see, is that basically in the, you know, the Western world, which administrator can you think of that was, you know, something special in the way of quality, something that people looked up to? Right? Basically, no one comes to mind. Right? Because it's based on niti. It's just whoever's clever enough and can, whoever's quick enough, then wins. So their life is not safe at any point. There's no security in that. And the Vedic system is that, you know, there's a time for, you have a, like Jarasandha, you know, he has Bhima, Arjuna, and Krishna there. Enemies. It's they're straightforward. They weren't beating around the bush trying to be nice. When they came in, you know, and broke things and didn't come in through the proper gate. You know, and when asked, then he says, yeah, of course, you know, this is who we are. And so then he says, but you're my guest, so what can we do? And then he says, we want to fight. You know? And then, you know, then it's worked out what would be the best. So, you know, Krishna is like, you know, he killed his, yeah, what is it, son-in-law, and, you know, it's hard to tell what varna is in, so beating him won't be any glory. Arjuna is not his match, so it would be, if you say, Jarasandha said, you know, he beat Arjuna, you know, in a wrestling match or something, then what's the glory? But Bhima, then you can say, okay, here's something, he wins. And so then during the day, they would wrestle all day, and then in the night, he would be their guest. You know, because they came as guests, so they're treated as guests. So they would sit and talk and talk Kshatriya stuff and do all that. So there's no worry that anything will go wrong. Like that. And then they rest. Because then the taste is there. That's the whole point, is that the Vedic is about
the rasa, the taste. And gradually, by association, you'll learn that there's the transcendental taste, you know, in the personal relationship with the Lord. So you don't want to get in the way of that. But in the Machiavellian or the Niti, then it's not about taste, it's about effectiveness.
Just get the result.
So sometimes managers say, well, you know, it's the best way. You just got the result. I was just being practical. It did, but the problem is there's also steps on the toes of relationships and things like that. So you have to balance that, of course, because you can't let, you know, just the relationships get in the way of the effectiveness or the effectiveness way of this. But generally, there's not necessarily an endeavor to even try. You know, so that's a weakness. If it's a matter of they've tried all the different ways and it's not going to work, so they just go ahead with what's effective, okay, then that's fair enough. But many, just because it's easier. Because if you count in relationships, it makes it so much more tough. Is that?
Yes, Machiavelli is.
Yeah. That's why in the West now they take Clausewitz, because it goes higher than Nietzsche. Like that. So it's
strategic.
Yeah, it's strategic. So it catches that there's a little bit more than just the tactical. You know, like that.
The demons, Rakshasas, the servants of Hiranyakashipu, thus began striking the tender parts of Prahlad Maharaja's body with their tridents. The demons all had fearful faces, sharp teeth, and reddish coppery beards and hair, and they appeared extremely threatening, making a tumultuous sound. Right, so this would be in the category. So you had the daityas, and then you had all the Rakshasas and everyone had done it. So they'll come within that category. You know, because they all have the same point of sense gratification. Just one may be a little more refined, a little less, but, you know, they're all the same community. Yes. Is there anything that he could have done? You know, is he supposed to jump up and go, hi-ya, and then he goes into slow motion and then he kicks and two demons go flying like that and then he's like... You understand? So all he can do is pray to the Lord. So in other words, if it's within your duties and your capacity to do something, that you do. But the point is the result's up to Krishna. That's where the surrender is. It's not that I'm doing something, therefore, it's if I think that my doing it is what protects me, that's where the surrender is missing. But if I'm doing my duties, but it's up to Krishna whether he's going to protect one or not. But what is he's a demon got to do with surrender to Krishna?
The person may say that I must do something to some way go away or somehow protect myself. That's why I protect myself.
The point is if the environment that one's in is not a protected environment, by adjusting it to something else, it'll be a more stable environment, so that we can be more Krishna conscious. That can be done. But the point is it's about being stable and Krishna conscious, not that you just don't like the person. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, you don't like the person, but the environment may be stable. If you don't like the person and this environment's not stable, then what's the benefit? But by adjusting out of that, if you go into an unstable environment, because of that it's hard to be Krishna conscious, then it has to be seen, is that of value? Because the bottom line is in what environment can you be more Krishna conscious? Right? Because all these things are required. Does that make sense? So it's not just the consciousness is the only matter here. You also have to say, because it's body, mind, and works. So if the body and mind and that is all taken care of, in whatever is the alternative environment, it can work. But if it won't, then one has to think about it carefully. So, because otherwise you have to make sure it's not a matter of, is the effort being put? Does this make sense? Because otherwise then we can say, it may be just whenever a little problem comes up, then we want to leave that situation rather than put in the effort to see if it'll work. So you have to be able to discern that. It's a matter of, we put in the effort, it's not working, another environment would be better. That's one thing. But if it's just a matter, as soon as you run into an obstacle, then we want to adjust, then that's not very good. That's why in the Vedic system, that it, the divorce is not a, you know, it's not an option, because then people, one, will go into marriage using intelligence and they'll maintain it by that. But in the modern, where you can get divorced, it's kind of like, you can try, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, hey, you know, they can try again. So they don't look at who they're getting involved in. They don't know the science of getting involved, the science of being involved. And so therefore, you know, so does that make sense? That's the whole idea. Because if you say you can't do this, then people are more careful. Okay, we should end.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav ki.